It's Thursday, October 8th, 2015. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Folk Runyon. And tonight we present a discussion on the Sphere of Tiphereth, the sixth Sephirot on the Tree of Life. Tiphereth is called the Sphere of Beauty and is the center of the tree, just as the sun is the center of the solar system. Tiphereth is the hub from which all the other paths radiate, and it is the downward reflection of light from Kether. Mythologically, it is the sphere of the dying gods, Osiris, Baal, and Jesus, and thus the point of mystic transformation and enlightenment. Raphael is the presiding archangel and is an agent of healing. Again, our texts will be Dion Fortune, Gareth Knight, and John Michael Greer. So join us for an hour of inspiration, and we'll get to the heart of old Adam Katman. And we have an exam question for you, which we will try to answer for you at the end of the hour. And that is, how many Kabbalists does it take to screw in a light bulb? And stay with us for the answer. And if I forget, then you can remind me to give it to you next week. What I would like to do first is to give you our write-up on Tiphereth in Hermetic Yoga beyond the middle pillar. We have, of course, the mandala for Tiphereth. And then we have the icon. Now, our mandala for Tiphereth does not use a Mogen David or a six-pointed star made up of two triangles. Our mandala is the universal hexagram, and of course we put the letter Resh, the Phoenician letter Resh, at the center of it, and it's in gold. And with pale blue petals, which are the color reflex of the yellow color. Now, under that, it says sixth sphere, the sun, seed letter, Resh, Archangel Raphael, God forms Baal and Mote, and the musical note is G. Now, Tiphereth, the sun, beauty, sacrifice, God, Baal, Mote, the Archangel Raphael. Tiphereth is the sixth sphere, the central sun on the middle pillar, the home of the solar gods and angels. Although Baal was not originally a solar being, he became one after the Zoroastrian and Hellenic influences solarized all of the Iron Age mythologies. Middle Eastern solarization of Baal may have begun with Melkart, the Phoenician Heracles, or Hercules, who followed the course of the sun through the signs or the beasts of the zodiac. In any case, Tiphereth is the home of the old pagan year kings, from Baal on through the centuries to his final Phoenician successor, Jesus of Nazareth. Actually, that's Jesus the Nazarene, because there was no Nazareth in Jesus' time. Who eventually replaces him? Jesus banishes Baal's brother Mote, the Grim Reaper, the god of death, and brings Astarte up from Netzach to sit beside him, represented by his consort and priestess Mary Magdalene in our Rosicrucian sixth degree. Now, Tiphereth is the sphere of beauty and transformation, ruled by the Archangel Raphael, who is the angelic counterpart of Baal, according to the Zohar. Raphael is the great healing angel and the ruler of the air element, which contains the life-giving and healing prana, that's oxygen, which we run through our arteries and veins when we breathe in and declare, through me flows a river of unlimited love. Now, let me make a couple comments on that. As I said, there was no Nazareth in Jesus' time. It wasn't, the city of Nazareth wasn't built until 200 years after he was crucified. So he was a Nazarene, and what that was an Olaist or Galilean Phoenician term for a holy man who had taken vows of chastity and certain other vows, and so the whole Nazarene movement actually stems from that. And as you recall, we had the expert on that subject, Karim El-Kusa, on the show some time back, and we also had him as a guest at our seasonal ceremony this month. And there are a number of things about Jesus that he reveals, and also Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Galilee, not Bethlehem of Judea. But all of this relates also to the fact that there was an Olaist or an hell-worshipping biblical religion and priesthood, if you will, practicing in Galilee, in Canaan, in Phoenicia, at the same time that the Judeans were practicing their form of Judaism down in Jerusalem. Jesus was more oriented toward the Phoenician tradition. The Phoenician tradition includes, of course, several books of the Bible, like Isaiah, and also the Book of Enoch, which is apocryphal in some respects, but it actually is a Canaanite book. This is important to mention because the solarism that affects Tipperath and affects the symbolism of Tipperath is something that we have been doing a lot of research on, and also a great deal of philosophical meditating on. And when I said that it was influenced by Zoroastrianism, I'm not really sure I think that it may very well have started in ancient Egypt rather than, and one of the reasons why I think so is just take a look at the Persian version of Ahura Mazda and all the rest of these. They use Egyptian winged sun disks. And I think Egyptian solarism may have been the original solarism that influenced, including the Phoenicians, and may have even influenced the Zoroastrians, because of course they, Ahura Mazda, their high god, which certainly influenced Ezra and the Bible, and influenced post captivity Judaism was very much influenced by Zoroastrianism, as we know. In fact, a number of things changed about Judaism when they came back. When they came back from Babylon, this solarism has gone all the way through. From I think it starts, and I think Karim would agree with me on this. It starts in Egypt with the grandfather of Akhenaten, who started it. And then Akhenaten actually institutionalized it by the time he got on Pharaoh's throne in Egypt. And they called the one god Aten. They did call he was Ra for a while, but then they decided to call the one god Aten, which is very much like Adon, Adonai, very, very similar, this concept of the sun representing the one high god and all had certainly influenced the lowest part of the Bible, at least the part that survived in Canaan and in among the so-called 10 lost tribes, who were never lost, by the way. They just They were the ones that stayed there. They were the ones that would stay there and were there at the time when Joshua came in, because Joshua, the idea that there were 12, there were these 12 great big tribes of Hebrews coming out of Egypt in the Exodus is probably not true. What happened, at least the second time around when Ezra came in, is they tried some to, almost by force to a certain extent, to convince the Canaanites that already lived there that they were the 10 lost tribes, or they were the 10 of the original Judean tribes, and they never left. They never went to. They didn't go down to Egypt. They sailed down there, you know, and traded with the Egyptians, but they didn't. They stayed in Canaan. So, but this part of the Bible, the lowest part of the Bible, is practiced there in Canaan, and the Elohim were the gods under El. They all presided. God presided over all of these other gods. And so the solarism represents, or came to represent El under Egyptian influence, and then under Zoroastrian influence and all. And that's very important to understand. And it's also important to understand about Tiphereth, why it is the sphere of the dying gods, or the sun of El. Sons of El, because in very ancient times there was a tradition that goes way, way back, and if you study Fraser's Golden Bough, you'll get many examples of it, of the year king, the god who is king for the year, and he is slain at the end of the year, either by his own people, or by if he's a god figure, if it's a mythologized figure, he's slain by the god of death or whatever. And this legend, and in the Egyptian version, of course, is Osiris, Isis, and Osiris and Set. But this business of the dying god and being resurrected, he's always resurrected by a goddess, by the way. And that seems to be the way it goes. Either his wife, his mother, his consort, he's resurrected. And there's a very important Gnostic document that rolled this all up, called the Nicene document. We've discussed this before, in which they trace all the way from Isis and Osiris, all the way up through Adonis and Tammuz, and of course, Baal and Astarte. They trace it all the way up to Jesus, and he's the last of the dying gods. And this Nicene document has been part of our tradition in the OTA for many, many years. We learned this from Jessie Weston, the British anthropologist, her book From Ritual to Romance, which we've also discussed on the show before. So Tiphereth is the sphere of the sun, and it is the sphere of the dying god. Let's mention at this point, let's mention Hercules, because Hercules, as you all know, Hercules has 12 labors that he does. And those 12 labors relate to, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize this, those 12 labors relate to the signs of the zodiac and the creatures of the zodiac. In fact, they were originally Phoenician, and Hercules was originally Melkart, and he had a temple in Tyre. So he mastered the beasts of the zodiac, and this came from the Phoenician into the Greek, and he became Heracles in Greek and Hercules in the Roman version, And he is a solar traveling deity. In other words, he travels, the sun travels through the zodiac, and Hercules travels with the sun. Now, and so Hercules represents man's journey through the his various incarnations, and he has an incarnation in each of the 12 signs, and he starts off in Leo and goes all the way through. And in the ancient times, they considered Cancer was the gate of the gods. Capricorn. Oh, as you were, Capricorn was the gate of the gods, and Cancer was the gate of men. You came in when down from the heavens. You came in to the zodiac through Cancer, and then you went through the whole cycle. And when you died, you went out through Capricorn. And this was very much involved in the legend of Hercules. And that is all part of the Tiphereth symbolism. Tiphereth, by the way, on the Tree of Life, is right in the center, in the middle pillar, and it is also called the sphere beyond the veil. And there's a veil there that you go through, but after you get out of Netzach, there's a veil that you have to go through. Or if you come up the middle pillar, like the mystics do, then you have to, you come up the right straight up, and you have to go through that veil. And it's the sanctuary beyond the veil, and it's considered where you finally come in contact with your higher self. Now, the Holy Guardian Angel operation is done in the sphere of Malkuth. However, it does have a relationship to the sphere of Tiphereth. And Dion Fortune says, Kether is metaphysical, Yesod is psychic, and Tiphereth is essentially mystical. Now, what she means by that, of course, is that it's the sphere of the mystics, and the middle pillar is the route of the mystics. A mystic will go straight up. Will go straight up the middle pillar, whereas an occultist will climb according to the path of the serpent and touch all the paths going up and go through all the spheres. And this, of course, is important to realize because one of the things about Zen Buddhism, and I know somebody's going to disagree with me on this, but the Zen Buddhist, he is sort of a middle pillar type person, whereas the middle pillar beyond, without doing the other pillars, he sits and meditates and tries to rise up the middle pillar, taking the mystical path. And whereas the occultist is more like a tantric practitioner, he works all of the spheres of the tree going up, and yet at the same time, the Tibetans will tell you that the tantric path is the short way, as opposed to the Zen path being the long way. So maybe they have something there, that the more work you do, the shorter, the easier it is. I'm going to get into to Gareth Knight here in his Kabbalistic Guide, his Practical Guide to Kabbalistic Symbolism, Volume 1, and read the characteristics of Tiphereth. Magical image is a king, a child, a sacrificed god. The god name is Jehovah Elohim Vadah. The archangel is Raphael. Let me mention something about that. The Golden Dawn and Gareth Knight and Dion Fortune all assign Raphael to Tiphereth. Raphael is the angel of the dawn, and the air element and the healing angel. Whereas John Michael Greer goes along with Bill Gray and some other people and assigns Mikael to Tiphereth. Now, actually, both Mikael and Raphael could be said to be at home in Tiphereth, because Mikael is, you know, the angel of fire and the angel of the south and the southern quadrant and the sacred lance and what have you. So there's a lot of solar symbolism that you can attribute to Mikael. One of the reasons why the Golden Dawn and both Night and Fortune, and of course they're all Golden Dawners, why they and we go along with Raphael. And by the way, this was something that this assignment was something that Trithemius and Agrippa could never completely agree on which one went where. So they just stuck Mikael and Raphael in Tiphereth and back and forth and let us try to sort it out. The reason why Raphael is preferred is because Raphael is a healing angel, and Tiphereth is the sphere of beauty. It's the sphere of love. It's the sphere of the energy that flows through us and through the tree, and it's the reflection down of Kether. And Raphael is much more in keeping with the idea that God is love. So I prefer Raphael in Tiphereth, and I think we'll stay with that symbolism. And one of the reasons why some people prefer Mikael is because Mikael is kind of a Christ figure, and obviously Jesus does go in Tiphereth. And some people prefer Mikael because they want a two-fisted Jesus. Well, you know, I mean, that's okay. That I can understand that. But as I say, there's enough argument. There's argument on both sides. But I personally, and going along with the rest of the Golden Dawn, I personally prefer Raphael and Tiphereth. And you go right down the line here. The mundane chakra is the sun. The virtue is devotion to the great work. The titles are the Tsar, the Zohar, Anpin, the lesser continents, Melech, the king. And the spiritual experience is the vision of the harmony of things and the mysteries of the crucifixion. And the absolutic color is clear rose pink. The briatic color is yellow. The Yetzeratic color is a rich salmon pink, and the Asiatic color is golden amber. The vice is pride. The symbols are the lament, the rose cross, the Calvary cross, a truncated pyramid, and the cube. Let's talk about that a little bit. Now, we've already mentioned the crucifixion, but the cube is an interesting aspect of this. A cube has six sides. If you unfold a cube, hinge the whole thing together and unfold it, it makes a nice Calvary-type cross. One square on the top, and then three squares across, and then three squares down. And it makes a very, very nice design that is rather effective. It's one of the badges of the Golden Dawn, of course. And the lament is the rose cross, and the rose cross, of course, is we use for making sigils and for describing. In our case, we have a rose cross design that includes all of the spheres of the tree of life and the psychic centers in an aniosphere pattern. And the truncated pyramid is a pyramid with a top cut off, and that gives you a symbol that relates to transcendence. When I said that the absolute color was a clear rose pink, and the briatic color was yellow. One at one time, I think somewhere in one of our books, maybe I think I reprinted it in the Hermetic Yoga. I was saying describing the difference between magical color and color that's scried. And I said that magical color, we impose magical color. The colors of the minutum mundum, and that is the combination. The minutum mundum is a combination of the king scale for the paths and the queen scale for the spheres. And because the paths are active, the spheres are passive. So the minutum mundum becomes a sort of a magical color formula. But these colors that we have are colors that we, as magicians, use to impose our design or our program, if you will, if you want to use a computer term, on the astral and they will in turn influence the etheric plane and the physical plane. But so I said at one point, I said, well, if somebody says, oh, well, good heavens, you have your heart chakra is you've got it yellow and blue and it should be pink. Well, actually, that was probably a mistake to use that analogy because in the Asawuthic color is pink, is rose pink. And I said, well, you can have yours pink and have it any color you want. But the difference is we're using magical color as a programming device, not as something you scry. If you scry it, if you are psychic enough to scry the color, look at a person, see through them, and see what color their chakra is, maybe it would be pink. And certainly, if you're seeing the absolutic color, it certainly would be. This, by the way, this magical color thing has caused a lot of confusion in ceremonial magic, because mainly in the pentagram ritual, where the old school, without even thinking about it, tell you to do your pentagram, your lesser pentagrams in blue, in electric blue. Well, that's what they look like on the astral, but you don't do them that way because when you impose them. You impose them in green because they are earth pentagrams. And very, very hard to explain to people once they learn it in that way, and trying to explain it to them to reprogram is difficult. Now, let me get to the what we might call the celestial theology or celestial symbolism behind all this. We referred to Tiberath as the sun, and as the sun, and then there's the sun behind the sun. Now, in one sense here, the Kabbalistic symbolism is, as I said, as Tiberath is the reflection of Kether. Kether is the source of the light at the top of the tree. That and then it reflects downward in Tiberath. Now, if we're going to take an analogy from the universe itself, I've got to fall back to something we mentioned before. There was a Russian philosophical physicist who came up with a very, very interesting concept. And that I personally find very satisfying. And have you ever wondered, and I'm sure he wondered, what keeps the sun going? I mean, if the sun is a great big thermonuclear furnace, why doesn't it just blow up? And what keeps that thing going? What keeps it burning? Who keeps shoveling the fuel into it? Well, this Russian this Russian theoretical philosophical physicist going by the latest interdimensional theories, he said, well, it's gaining, it's being fueled. The stars are being fueled from their counterparts in other dimensions. In other words, what he's suggesting is either there's a dimension that is one great big huge furnace that's and these stars are little points where the energy is coming through from this other dimension, which is a dimension of fire, and so where, yeah, that's the fuel now, the idea behind this is that there is an interdimensional source of this energy that is, in a sense, a physics explanation for the sun beyond the sun. Now, we're going to carry this a little further about the symbolism of the universe itself and relating to that. I want to read a little bit from Gareth Knight here. The mundane chakra of Tipperath is the sun, which is the source of light and life to its universe, and so a physical manifestation of the powers of God himself and the spiritual worlds. The conditioner and sustainer of our solar system is the solar logos, commonly referred to as God. And though he is the one God as far as humanity and the rest of the solar system is concerned, he is God only over that system. And the sun can be considered his physical body. Though all the rest of the physical existence of the solar system is under his presidency. Now, Giordano Bruno got burned at the stake for saying the same thing about 500 years ago. Where esoteric theology differs from exoteric theology is that the latter regards God as unchangeable and supreme over all existence. Esoteric theology, on the other hand, considers God, great as he is, to be evolving. Also, it considers that every star is a god presiding over its own creation, and that over the God of our solar system, there are other gods rising in greatness to the God presiding over the whole galactic system, which, like the solar systems, is a gigantic revolving wheel. And that, presumably, there may be a God presiding over all galactic systems throughout the whole of interstellar and intergalactic space. And this is not a denial of monotheism, for the God or solar logos of our system is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent within the system, and so is the one God for all over all over which it presides. And all the extra influences, whether from Sirius, the Great Bear, the Pleiades, Andromeda, or the constellations of the zodiac, affect the solar system only through the mediation of the solar logos, not direct. Now, that's quite a mouthful, and yet at the same time, when you look up at the night sky, or even better, when you look up at some of the images that Hubble has shown us of the nebulae and all the rest of this, and you contemplate just how many gods are there, and how And where does their rule extend, and is the galaxy an empire? Is the galaxy an empire ruled by this galactic center, or what? You know, you can really do a lot of very interesting speculating on this. And as I say, Giordano Bruno did get burned at the stake because that was back when Copernicus was being contested by the Catholic Church, and Bruno and it said, yes, Copernicus is right, And they didn't mind that so much because they were starting to accept that people could say Copernicus was right. But when Giordano Bruno said yes, and the sun must be the god of our universe, when he meant said our universe, he meant our solar system. At that point, they thought that was blasphemy, and they burned him at the stake. So that was a shame, because Bruno was quite a genius and very, and one of the great hermetic magicians of the Renaissance. Now, I'm going to kind of digress a little bit here and venture into my favorite degree of Scottish Rite, which got butchered a little while ago, and because of the same kind of attitude that got Giordano Bruno burned at the stake, caused the crucifixion of our 28th degree. And the 28th degree in Scottish Rite is the degree is called Knight of the Sun or Prince Adept, and this is one of the oldest degrees, or at least according to some people, it's one of the oldest degrees in Masonry. And Albert Pike was very enamored of Zoroaster and Zoroastrian philosophy, and so he came up with a version of the 28th degree, which was very hermetic and very alchemical and very much along the line of what we've been talking about tonight, however, because it was pagan, if you will, some misguided Christians in Scottish Rite, they decided it was too pagan or too Gnostic, and so they had to tear it to pieces and recast it in something that is really sad. But fortunately, we can still, there's a campaign going to restore it, and we can still do it by what we call exemplification. In other words, we can still perform the degree as it was originally done. We just can't call it official, but we can still do it. In fact, they even the Picophiles got together and even published an issue of the journal in which they suggested that people do that. Anyway, I want to read you my epitome of this 28th degree here. The ancient Magi of the Hermetic tradition held that an individual human being was a miniature of the greater solar system with the sun at its center in the region of the heart. Their maxim was, as above, so below. The venerable Kabbalists also followed this principle and placed the sun in the center of their tree of life design in the sphere of Tiphereth. Thus, the sun became the central source of light and life-giving power for the tangible universe without, and for man's divine inspiration within. And so this greater sun's progress in the heavens could be likened to an individual man's progress through the gate of life and through the gate of death. You should know that even before the vastness of the greater universe beyond our own solar system became common knowledge, ancient masters were aware that the physical sun itself was not the ultimate God. The sun was then, as it is today, God's instrument in the heavens, his lamp, that is visible and tangible aspect of that great and ineffable light from beyond, and that hidden spark of the same eternal flame that resides within all men. Know then, my brother, that the great, eternal, ineffable spirit we call God is not the sun. Rather, it is the sun beyond the sun. And in your own individual heart, it is the tiny spark of that greater sun that ensouls us all. The sun within you, when finally purified to its original God-given eternal flame, is identical with every other spark of holy fire in the greater and lesser universes. Thus, you may say in all humility that you are one with God and one with all humankind, but you may not say in prideful arrogance that you are God, for this would imply that you had purified your spirit beyond all your individual human faults, foibles, and desires. My brother, if you could accomplish such a great work of spiritual alchemy, then time, distance, and darkness would all disappear for you. You would be one with the light, one with God, and you would find yourself at the very center of the universe without having moved a single step. Even if you never achieve such ultimate perfection, your awareness of this profound principle is the beginning of what is called enlightenment. Now, you will find that, and a little plug here, in the seventh ray, book three, the green ray, and it's part of The Great Secret of the Freemasons, Alchemists, Rosicrucians, Sufis, and Kabbalists by good old Frater Fabian, and you know who that is. And so I suggest those of you who want to have that and go a little bit deeper into that, that you might want to order that. You can order that on Amazon. Or if you are an associate member, you can dig out a coupon for the third ray and send in and get it at cost. And one of the things, of course, about TIPRF that we have to mention is that it is the sphere of the dying God and it is the sphere, of course, of Jesus and it is the sphere in the Golden Dawn. It's the sphere in which when the initiate reaches it, they reach the status of Adeptus Minor, which actually makes an Adeptus Minor is a magician who has certain powers, and I would like at this point to call upon Dion Fortune. In her description of the whole process of the powers of the Adeptus Minor here. The Archangel Tiphereth is Raphael, the spirit that standeth in the sun, who is also the angel of healing. When the initiate is working on the tree, that is to say, building up in his imagination a diagram of the tree of life in his aura, he formulates Tiphereth in his solar plexus between the abdomen and the breast. And actually, we do that pretty much in the heart area. If he intends to work in the sphere of the six Sephirot, the six Sephirah, he concentrates the power in this center, he will find that he himself has suddenly become a spirit standing in the sun with the blazing photosphere all around him. Now, this is something we do in Hermetic Yoga in the temple. We expand the sphere within ourselves to encompass the entire magic circle in a globe. It is one thing to formulate a sephirah in one's aura, but it is quite another to find oneself inside the sephirah. This is one of the things that we certainly do in Hermetic Yoga. Although one can receive the influence of a sephirah by means of the former operation, and it is a good routine method for daily meditation, it is not until one has everted, as it were, turned clean inside out so that the position is reversed And instead of the sphere being inside one, one is inside the sphere. That one can work with the power of a Sephirot. It is this experience which is the culmination of the initiation of a Sephirot. Now, this sort of thing you will experience in Hermetic Yoga. And those of you members who haven't sent in for your Hermetic Yoga book, I would strongly recommend that you do so. The order of angels of Tiphereth are the Malachim, or the kings. These are the spiritual principles of natural forces, and no one can control or even safely make contact with the elemental principles unless he holds the initiation of Tiphereth, which is that of a minor adept. For he must have been accepted by the elemental kings. That is to say, he must have realized the ultimate spiritual nature of natural forces before he could handle them in their elemental form. In their subjective elemental form, they appear in the microcosm as powerful instincts of combat, of reproduction, of self-abasement, of self-aggrandizement, and all of those emotional factors known to the psychologist. It is obvious, therefore, that if we stir and stimulate these emotions in our natures, it must be in order that we may use them as servants of the higher self, directed by reason and spiritual principle. It is necessary, therefore, that when we operate the elemental forces, we do so through the kings, under the presidency of the archangel, and by the invocation of the holy name of God appropriate to the sphere. Microcosmically, this means that the powerful elemental driving forces of our nature are correlated with the higher self instead of being disassociated into the cleptic underworld of the Freudian unconscious. And of course, we don't use a cleft because we prefer Christian Tartarus. Elemental operations are not, of course, performed in the sphere of Tiphereth, but it is essential that they should be controlled from the sphere of Tiphereth if they are to remain white magic. If there is no such higher control, they will soon slide off into black magic. It is said that at the fall of the four lower Sephirot, the four lower Sephirot became detached from Tiphereth and assimilated to the Cliphi. Here again, I don't agree with the unfortunate Cliphi. When the elemental forces became detached from their spiritual principles in our concepts, so that they became ends in themselves, even if no evil but merely experimentation is intended, a fall takes place and degeneration soon follows. Now let's just make a little correction on this. This whole Cliphoff concept is a result of the attempt by the rabbis and of the Judean tradition of the Yahwehist version of the Bible to take the pagan gods, the Elohim, in other words, their own Elohim, and put them down in a garbage pit. And when the Christians finally took over, when Hermetic Kabbalah is more under Christian influence, and in our case, we use a Tartarus where we have room for virtuous pagans, and you'll find that these ancient entities, the Elohim, so to speak, the pagan gods, are not consigned to the sump of the Cliphar. I want to make that clear because that's something that has caused a lot of confusion. And because the pagan god, the gods which are the Elohim, really. And we discussed this several times before on the program, the ancient gods are still with us. They're still with us, and some of them translated into angels, but actually the Elohim are still very much with us, and they're very much with us in the Kabbalah, but they do not belong in a Cliphoth. And a Cliphoth was conceived of a garbage pit, where these entities were broken. They were broken, and they were dumped as broken shells into this pit, and then they're given terrible titles, and so that concept is I don't think has any part in Hermetic or Rosicrucian Kabbalah. Anyway, we're just about running close to the end of the hour here, and next week we're going to continue our exploration of the Tree of Life. And next week, of course, we have Gabura, number 5, the sphere of Mars, and home of the goddess Anath. And now, let me say this about that. There is no such thing in Hermetic magic. There is no such thing as black magic. Black magic is a term we don't use. There's red magic. That's Kapoor. We'll talk about that next week. And there's and black magic is a term that was applied back in the during the Faustian era late when the Renaissance phased into the Baroque. There was a school of magic that came up in Central Europe, which we refer to as the Faustian school, and that's where the term black magic comes in. And interestingly enough, when Stan Lee and Steve Ditko started Doctor Strange back in the 70s, they called him the master of black magic. And for several issues of the Doctor Strange stories, they referred to him as master of black magic. Well, somebody, but at the same time, he's supposed to be helping humankind, and he's supposed to be fighting the forces of darkness. Apparently, enough people wrote into Steve and Ditko and Stan Lee and told him, hey, look here, you know, he can't be a master of black magic and be fighting for fighting the good fight against the forces of Satan and all of that. So they kind of turned it around, and they made Doctor Strange the master of the mystic arts. And apparently they were corrected in that. So let's not get into this black magic idea, and especially you know, we need to stay away from that's another reason to stay away from the Cliphoth concept. There are people in the Gothic community that like to try to evoke stuff from the Cliphoth. This is not a good idea. And in fact, we have a good friend who did that, and that's what he got. He went out and he thought his Goetic spirits were in the Cliphoth, and boy, when they came up, they sure acted like it. So what you see is what you get, and what you want is what you get. So we leave the Cliphoth alone. And anyway, I will see you next week, and we'll venture to Gabura. And meanwhile, take care, be well, and good magic.